start your day the Turaway, Northwest London, Wednesday, 20th of Kislev, 14th of December. Rabbi Yehuda Finchus Shlita, an up-to-date reanalysis of brain death in Halacha, Part 2. This week's Turaway have been sponsored by families Geller and Creditor, Lichvod Simchas Anasun of Tiritz and Avi, whose chasna was last Sunday. Yi Rotzon Shivnu Bayis Neimon B'Yisrael L'Shem V'Lishilo.
This is the second part of an up-to-date analysis of brain death in Halacha. And today, we'll be focusing on the medical issues which have not been discussed by the Foreskin, but need to be addressed by them, as far too many questions have been left unanswered. A quick recap from last week. We discussed the six responsa of the Moshe Feinstein. And very briefly, he explicitly differentiates between ventilated patients and non-ventilated patients. And it's very important not to conflate between the two. And I've seen even medical halakha experts conflate the two. That does not align with the sponsor of Moshe Feinstein, because he says very clearly, in non-ventilated patients, then we have the cessation of respiration. However, in ventilated patients, like we read clearly last week in Yeridea Kuflamet Beis in Chelek Gimel, then you need Hutas Havosh, because they're two separate diagnoses in Halacha. Now, this decapitation of the total necrosis of the brain, I also explained last week, is not observed nowadays. Nowadays, we see the dysfunction of a brainstem, but not a decomposed brainstem. We don't have respirator brain, like Rabbi Tendler wrote and explained, the hole in the head syndrome. Because brain death is a very broad term, has many details, different countries, different legal jurisdictions understand it differently, and it's impossible to understand it just by using this broad term. We have to understand the smaller details, and that is what we'll be doing today. The Talmud in Gemara and Yuma, which everybody quotes regarding brain death, asks, Ad heichan hu bodek, if somebody is lying under a collapsed building, where do you have to check? So we check to the nostrils, dichtiv kol asher nishmas ruach chayim be'achav, because the breath of life is in the nostrils. However, if we have a look at Rashi there, he writes, in doime lemeis she'eino meizis eivavav. He's talking about a person who is lying without any movements. There's another Gemara in Gittin, Daf Ayin Amud Beis, which isn't quoted so much, which talks about three separate issues, Gittin, Eidus, and Pirkus. It talks about someone, somebody who they slashed his simanim, the trachea and the esophagus, he can't breathe. You can still write a get to his wife. He's still not considered death. The Gemara asks, "Aye, shachas bo shnayim or rov shnayim v'barach me'idim alav." You're allowed to give edus. You're allowed to give testimony that this person is dead, or this person is going to die. So the Gemara answers, Chayhu, the sofo lamas. It's an irreversible injury, and he's going to die shortly. Therefore, even if you don't see him lying dead, once you have seen that the simanim, the esophagus and the trachea are slashed, that is enough to give testimony to say that he has died, and his wife would be permitted to marry. That's the second part of the Gemara. And the last part of the Gemara talks about galus and explains somebody who shachat simanim, whether he goes to galus or not. And the Gemara answers and talks about that as long as there is pilkus, as long as he's flapping around, then it's not considered that he is dead. Adarabba, kirevit misaso. That's why if somebody slashes somebody else's trachea and esophagus, v'simanim, he won't be chayev galus, because it was indirect, because the continued pilkus, the flapping and the movement, the reflexes which he shows, will also quicken his death. And we see clearly from this Gemara that he is not actually considered dead as long as this Pirkus, even though it is an irreversible injury. Because we have to understand, this whole idea of Pirkus movements, they are guidelines. Sometimes we say they are a sign of life, sometimes we say they are not a sign of life. It is not a general concept of Zanav HaLetar, like the lizard's lair which was cut off, that in all cases, all movements are not a sign of life, but only in specific cases. And the Rambam says this very, very clearly in a very interesting halacha in Isurei Bia, Perek Aleph, Halacha Yud Beis. He's talking about somebody committing adultery, Habala Elva Min Avayas Vihimeta Patu Miklum. If somebody is dead, obviously there is no Gila Avayas, there is no adultery here. And then he explains that if the woman was a trefer, somebody who's going to die, even though we know for sure, then it's still going to be a problem of Gila Avayas. Then he writes, this is the important point.
Sorry,
that filu shachetzba, if it's a trefer of a woman who has an injury, who, or an illness where she's going to die, she's still considered alive, and there would be a problem of adultery in this situation. And then he writes, I know it sounds strange, but this is what he's, I don't know if it actually happened, but just to understand the halacha, which we can apply to brain death. Even if you slashed both her simanim, the trachea and the esophagus, but adayin he mefal keset, as long as she's still flapping around, haba alea chayev. Someone commits adultery in this state, is chayev, ad she tamuz, until she dies, or ad she yatzis roisha. Or unless we have a situation of hutas avoisha. We see clearly again, this is from a Gemara in Gittin. The Rambam makes his chiluk explicitly. And this is the Mishnah in Oalos, the famous one, which is very well quoted. But not many people quote the Gemara in Gittin of this Rambam. In fact, there's a book, Kviyas Rega HaMavis, which was brought out about 10 years ago, which has 50 essays on brain death. And not one of them speak about this issue, which I think is a very important issue, and it has been overlooked. The Me'iri also says there's a Gemara in,
if you have an animal and you do that to an animal, you could eat it.
So the Gemara says, as long as they're still flapping around and there's still movements, they're still going to be considered alive. On the one hand, you can give testimony that they're going to die, and even if you subsequently don't find the body, the wife will be free to marry, because as if it says chai, the sofu lamas. On the other hand, they're not considered dead for other halakhas as long as they're still flapping around until hutas avoy, decapitation. It's a level of injury which is more than just slashing the simonim. The Me'iri also writes, there's a Gemara in Yuma which talks about where two kohanim were running up the ramp and one was stabbed in the heart. And then he writes, Ein ames mitame be'oel, a dying person isn't considered dead, agitated in nature, v'afilu goises, even if he's a goises, afilu nishchetu shtei simonim, even if a trachea and esophagus were split, Ein ames mitame ad sheyamus ligamrei below shum pilpu u'below shum tenu. He's not considered dead until he completely is without any pupil, any twitching, and without any movement. Last week we quoted the Moshe Feinstein, who also says exactly the same thing. In fact, in the letter which he wrote to the assemblyman Miller, which I quoted last week, where he was against brain death, which he called it unacceptable, he writes, in a patient presenting the clinical picture of death, i.e. no signs of life, such as movement or response to stimuli. So this is clear. No one can argue with this. It's a Rashi, it's a Rambam, the Me'iri, the Moshe, that a person is only considered dead when there is absolutely no movement. Apart from a case of Hutas Avoy, which I'll talk about. Rabbi Tendler also writes that you need unresponsiveness, absence of all movement, of all reflexes. These are the Harvard criteria. What are the Harvard criteria? There are four conditions. These were written in 1968. There's unresponsiveness, no movements or breathing, no reflexes, and they did a confirmatory test, which is another change. Because nowadays you don't have to do confirmatory tests. Then they did an EEG, but I'm not going to discuss that now. However, in 1995, the Academy, American Academy of Neurology, changed the criteria. They changed the protocols, which isn't consistent with the Harvard criteria. And they talk about the clinical observations which are compatible with a diagnosis of brain death. And they list seven. And this is really important because this has not been noticed. Spontaneous movements, shoulder elevation, back arching, the absence of diabetes insipidus, that's important, but I don't have time to go into the relevance of that. Deep tendon reflexes, superficial abdominal reflexes, triple flexion response, and the Babinski reflexes. These are all different types of reflexes in their hands and their legs, which are observed in brain people who are diagnosed as brain deaf.
They have no American, none of these reflexes.
I'll explain why it's not a problem medically.
No, but that's what the criteria is. They don't have any of these reflexes. So they're considered brain dead.
They are considered brain deaf, but they don't have any these reflexes. And I'll explain, they don't have brainstem reflexes, but these are spinal cord mediated reflexes. I'll explain in a minute.
Or abnormal reflexes.
What's that?
Abnormal reflexes.
Yes. So Dr. Widgets, again from American Academy of Neurology, he talks about that could be forceful neck flexion, it could be abrupt rising of the arm, it could be spontaneous very slow head turning from one side to the other. And they can go on for many, many hours. In fact, before procurement of the organs, they give muscle paralysis medication in order that during the actual surgery they won't move and maybe hit the surgeon doing the surgery. Now, what is the medical explanation to this? Because medically, all we need is a dysfunctional brainstem. All these reflexes are not mediated by the brainstem. They're different parts of the body, of the central nervous system, which control reflexes. But these reflexes are mediated, they are sourced in the spinal cord. So therefore, the whole issue medically is that we cannot diagnose that the brainstem is dead if there are any reflexes which are mediated, controlled by the brainstem, like the gag reflex we spoke about last week. However, if they are from the spinal cord, then that won't be a problem medically because that does not indicate a living or functioning brainstem. And that makes sense medically. However, in halakha, we don't see this distinction between a brainstem-mediated movements and spinal cords. Rashi, they didn't even know about this. And don't forget, this is only very recent. This only applies to people who are ventilated. On a ventilator, it's only in those people where you would actually see, you can make that differentiation between the types of the source of those movements. But in all the different Makovis of Chazal and the Rishonim and Mishnah, obviously there's absolutely no difference. And this is a very, very big question nowadays, which has not been addressed by any poysik. And I'm assuming because they just don't know, because they weren't told. I've seen patients who are diagnosed with brainstem death, and you see these movements very, very clearly. And this is a very, very big issue according to halakha, because according to halakha, it's very important. It's not just the cessation of breathing, it's the cessation of breathing and movements, and they do display movements, and the way the medical protocol explain it does not fit in or align according to halakha. The only time where it would make a difference if if you have Hutas Avoyish. But Moshe says that, the Rambam says that. That's the Gemara, that's the Mishnah in Ohelos, which says, Hutas Roshehem, Afa Pishem Efar Kusin, Temeim. Even though they continue to wither and to move, they are still considered dead. Kegon Zanav Shalatashi Mifar Keses. But, if you remember last week where I started asking about the Oyla Sa'oif, that was a sort of an injury which Rav Moshe opened his first tshuva in 1968 to Dayan Weiss, that was talking about a decapitation. And it's only in those areas where we can say that movement is not a movement. That is very clear. He makes that distinction. We can't extrapolate the idea and the of Pilkus and Zanav Lata'a to a case where somebody, trachea and esophagus, has been slashed, or to the cessation of breathing in a person with a dysfunctional brainstem. This is a very important point, which, like I said, it's the small details, but it has not been addressed, unfortunately, by the point scheme.
They would accept head cut off altogether, don't they?
Yeah, if that was the case, or if they had a completely necrosed brain, then it wouldn't be an issue. But that doesn't happen nowadays. And that's what I discussed last week. So this is the second reason why, and it's a change. And it's only from 1995. And these changes have to be addressed.
This is the science of the Goyish world, isn't it?
Yes. Okay?
In addition to the if you like, the shkita of the two simonim, yeah, what does cutting the head off do in addition?
Great question. That's what Rav Moshe talks about. There he talks about also that it includes also a substantial portion of the back of the neck as well. And it's a bigger anatomical injury.
But that's physical, isn't it?
Correct. Correct. It's a physical. So the Rambam has a whole long list. He talks about Nishbaram, Afrekasver, spinal column was, the neck was broken, with Rov Basar Ima. That's one. Then there's Hutas Avoyish, which he explains, which is like the Oyla Sa'oif, which is the Shtei Simonim and the Miud to the Basa. And they're different levels. However, if it was just Nishkata Simonim, then it would not be considered that. So we have to understand, and this is my main point, that this whole idea of Zanav HaLata, like the lizard's tail, it can't be just used anywhere, in any context. Chazal, the Rambam, Rav Moshe, all use it in a specific context. It's not just something just can be used, you know, in to explain anything in each situation. And it certainly does not apply to a simple dysfunctional brainstem. And like I said, there have been changes over the years, and these changes have not been addressed. And I think they must be addressed, because these are major questions on the whole idea. Now, I'm going to go on to the second stage. There's much more to speak about it, but I want to talk about the test. Rav Amar, who used to be the chief rabbi of Israel, the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim now, he has a very long responsa in his Shu'ot Shema Shlomo, and he was concerned about doing the actual test to the person who we're assuming that he is brain dead, of moving a goyis. We know that you're not allowed to move and goises. In fact, in the Bondi letter, which we also discussed last week, with Moshe Feinstein also explains that before a patient is declared as dead, he's considered a goises. And Rabbi Tendler, if you remember, I read out his description of the test. He explains that we don't actually even touch or move the goises. And in this response, he asked Rabbi Professor Steinberg about this issue, and he writes, and I'm going to translate from English, it's from Chelek Zayin, nowadays there are no prohibitions with the test, as there is no need to move the patient during these tests. And that is very difficult to understand, because they do move the patients. They have to do something called the Dolai test, where they move their head, they have to do the gag reflex, and there are many tests, both by the bedside clinical test where they move a patient, and also with the confirmatory test. So, for example, Professor Cohen, who's the head of transplant in Israel, he writes that the requirement of a Rabbanut, which you have to do a blood flow test, we have to take them to the radiology suite in another part of the hospital, poses an additional hazard. And in fact, during 2011, two cases developed severe hemodynamic compromise during transport with subsequent cardiac arrest before brain respiratory death could be determined. So this has been documented in Israel, that there's been a danger even by moving them where people have died, and people, the poskim, have to be aware of what happened. They have to address these questions, because these are changes which did not happen once. And like I said, in Rabbi Tendler's explanation of the blood flow test, they said they brought a portable camera to the patient. And I also mentioned the David Feinstein's 219 psak, where he said that you should not be doing any of these tests. Now, I want to speak about the apnea test. The apnea test, they claim, is the most important test where they can prove the cessation of breathing. And to understand that, we have to understand what exactly does the brainstem control. And this is quite complex. I'm going to try and simplify it as much as possible. I can breathe consciously, take a deep breath now, and when you're sleeping, the involuntary control of the brain, that is what, or if somebody, Khalila, is unconscious, that is what the brainstem controls. But what exactly does the brainstem control? Because they're a very complex process. We have in our bodies something called chemoreceptors. They're like sensors which detect either too much carbon dioxide or not enough oxygen, and they give out signals to the brainstem. They're telling the brainstem, we don't have enough oxygen, or we have too much carbon dioxide, we need to get rid of it. The brainstem, via the nerves, sends signals to the diaphragm and to the muscles in the chest area to contract. And that is what we call inhalation. When we inhale, that is controlled by the brainstem. And that's it. It's something very, very important. But if you read many of the truths of the poskim, they talk about when somebody connected to a ventilator, it's like a balloon. But it's very different to a balloon. Why? Because if I provide oxygen to a balloon, oxygen is going to be, come out. That's it. However, with a brainstem dead person, you provide oxygen, but what comes out is carbon dioxide. Not only is that people who are diagnosed with brainstem death, they can actually absorb food, they're actually connected to, they're provided with nutrients. That's not going to happen to somebody dead in a morgue. They're not going to be able to digest or absorb the food. They can also eliminate waste products through urination and defecation. That does not happen to somebody in a morgue. And most importantly, which we find in halacha, is that there are lots of movements. And this is really important, because there's a big difference, like I said, between ventilated patients and non-ventilated patients. The Moshe Feinstein writes clearly that as long as the ventilator is connected, asur lito mipiv, deshemehu chai, perhaps he is alive. He writes that af she'en yecholi limshon ba'atman, even if they can't breathe independently, v'gam lo nikarim behem imnine chayas, we don't see any signs of life, which is movement, which we do see nowadays. Perhaps they are still not dead. In fact, the Moshe Sternbach, he wrote a psak saying that somebody who was brainstem dead is considered dead according to halacha because they cannot breathe. And later, he retracted his psak and he wrote, I made a mistake. I didn't realize that they are connected to a ventilator in the first place. He said he wasn't provided with all the information. And this is really important point, because I saw, and if you look in last edition of ASIA, Medical Halachic Journal, they make a comparison between somebody whose brainstem death controls the breathing and they cannot breathe independently to somebody who has cardiac arrest. But there's a very big difference between them. Somebody with brainstem death dysfunction, he cannot ventilate. He doesn't have the drive to ventilate. He doesn't, that's what they call it, the ventilatory drive. The problem is, in Hebrew, we just use the word neshima, and it's very difficult to make that distinction. But in English, it would be more correct, and in fact, the American Academy of Neurology explain that an apnea test will prove the absence of an independent ventilatory drive, that drive to ventilate. But it isn't the total absence of respiration as it would be with somebody with cardiac arrest who is not connected to a ventilator. I just want to finish by explaining this is not just a halachic request for reanalysis, even legally and medically. In 2009, Nature, which is arguably the most highly respected medical publication, they wrote an editorial. And this is, I'm going to read out word for word. It's so important, but this isn't just like, you know, a halachic issue. In practice, unfortunately, physicians know that when they declare that somebody on life support is dead, they are usually obeying the spirit, but not the letter of this law. And many are feeling increasingly uncomfortable about it. In particular, they struggle with three laws phrases, irreversible, all functions, and the entire brain, knowing that they cannot guarantee full compliance. They do know that when they declare a death according to strict clinical criteria, the principles of which are outlined in the original report of the President's Commission, that the persons, to all intents and purposes, are dead. However, there are issues of the blood chemistry that suggest the pituitary gland at the base of the brainstem of the brain is still functioning. As do post-mortem observations, this is what we quoted last week, that relatively large areas of tissues can be metabolically alive in different areas of the brain at the time death is declared. The time has come, and this is what I'm asking as well, for a serious discussion on redrafting laws that push doctors towards a form of deceit. That is Nature magazine. In fact, in America as we speak now, there's a Uniform Law Commission where they've established a drafting committee in order to change the act, because there's a difference between what is written in the law and what the actual doctors do. Many doctors say that just like we have somebody who is legally blind, he might not be biologically blind, but it's just a definition that they're blind enough that they won't be able to drive, or they might be able to receive some benefits. So too, medically, we have to draw the line somewhere. And when somebody's on a ventilator, we draw the line where their brain stem is deaf. This is really important, but the first...
Can we withdraw the ventilator from somebody?
That's going to be a major... The Moshe I just read out said that you cannot withdraw the ventilator until you can prove a total disconnect between the brain and the head, and
how do you do that?
That's hutazavosh.
How do you do that?
So that used to be done, and we have to get back to that situation. Unfortunately, and I'm going to finish, and I'll take the questions afterwards, because the time is important here. There's a combination of outdated information, some missing information, some simplified information, some misinformation, whether it's on the medical aspects, whether it's on the halachic aspects. Even the two shiurim I gave today, half an hour last week, doesn't really do justice to understand the whole issue. But it's really important. Do not rely on a simplified understanding. Do not rely on a partial understanding. And I think it's very important that the contemporary poskim, especially those who subscribe to brain death, have to realize that due to many changes, due to many questions which have not been discussed, a reanalysis is something which is mandated. Thank you.
Yes. She's coming.
What's the